The Lollygaggers podcast turns 50 today. To all our listeners, we say thank you. To those that have listened to all 50, we sincerely apologize. On this episode, Jeff mourns Stanley Tucci and shouts frustrations at the silence, while Justin slobbers over Doom Patrol again. For the Gentleman's Challenge, we go for homicidal staycations at Minnie's Haberdashery and Hulu's Pink Motel. Welcome to episode 50 of the Lollygaggers podcast, a show about all sorts of different things from comics to games, movies to TV. I am one of your hosts, Jeff.
I'm the other one, Justin. How's it going, man? Just keep in perspective. I think 50. Joe Rogan's on like 1,200 or 12,000, something like that. So
50. 50.
About Jupiter.
Right. I like how it just drops the F, like it's fitting. I love that episode so much. So, man, what's happening? What's new?
Nothing. I was homesick today. And then I have, about 2 months left in the school year. And then a bunch of weird things are going to be happening soon. So it's exciting. Don't want to get too public about it yet. But hopefully
you sound really excited. You sound really positive and uplifting. You're hyping episode 50 here.
It's nerve-wracking. We have a lot of stuff to do around the house and stuff. So it's frustrating. But, like, it's exciting. It's also, there's a lot of stuff involved that is scary. So it's just cautiously optimistic is the way I can express my feelings.
Sure. So speaking of scary and frustrating, I want to talk about a movie that I just watched, Sim Transitioning, which is one of those two things. I'm not going to say which yet, but you'll get the drift pretty soon. So I want to talk about the 2019 Netflix film, The Silence. It's directed by John R. Leonetti, and it's got writing credits for Carrie and Shane Van Dyke. Now, this stars Stanley Tucci, who I think is a super underrated actor. I like him in pretty much everything I've ever seen him in. I remember when he was in the first season of Fortitude on Amazon, and he really classed that thing up. Like, he really classed that whole season up. Anyway, Stanley Tucci, and it's got Kiernan Shipka, who I think a lot of people at this point recognize from The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix as well, that new television show, which I really want to get back to, by the way, because the second half of the first season dropped, and I am super far behind. But anyway, I don't want to get too off the topic. Now, the movie is called The Silence. If you have seen A Quiet Place, you know it's basically the same sort of story. And it's the notion that there's a post-apocalyptic monster threat that hunts based on sound, and so everyone's got to be really, really quiet. Now, also like The Quiet Place, there just so happens to be an elder daughter that is deaf. It's so weird. It's just like so, you know, so coincidental how all this is happening. Now, there are some stark differences between The Silence and between A Quiet Place. Most notably is when they start in terms of the process of the apocalypse. So let's dial it back. The very beginning of this movie begins with certain researchers, some sort of geological researchers somewhere in, I think, the Pennsylvania-ish area, somewhere in the wilds of Pennsylvania, are digging through some caves, and they break through into some pocket of like subterranean cave, which releases a bunch of bat-like creatures called that are later referred to as Vesps. And these bat-like creatures immediately proceed to just completely wreck those researchers. And then moments later, they kind of move off into the world, right? And so we are in Pennsylvania-ish, something like that. And we follow Stanley Tucci's family. He is the father. He's Hugh Andrews. There's also Miranda Otto, who plays his wife. If you remember Miranda Otto, Lord of the Rings fame, she plays Kelly Andrews. Kiernan Shipka plays Allie, the oldest daughter. They have a son. I want to say his name is Jude, but I'm not sure. And then John Corbett. Do you know who John Corbett is?
I can't currently remember.
You would totally recognize him if you saw John Corbett, but he's my Big Fat Greek Wedding, if you remember that. I always remember him from Big Fat Greek Wedding. He was the groom in that. But anyway, he is in here and completely wasted. He plays like the best friend of Hugh. Now, what basically happens is this: the movie starts off, it's everything's normal, everything's fine, etc., etc. But then something happens, and really no one knows what. And it's sort of like The Happening for about 15 minutes, where it's just like, what's happening? I don't understand. There's just some crazy... Is it a terrorist attack? Are we being attacked? Is it some sort of biochemical weaponry? It's really weird.
These plants are trying to kill us because of the air.
Yeah, it's just...
What's happening?
The part in The Happening where Mark Wahlberg speaks to a fake plant is just quintessentially Wahlberg.
I'm sorry, man.
So anyway, despite the fact that the news begins to tell everyone to stay at home and to not make any sort of sound, they decide that it would be better if they were to leave their home where they're safe and drive off who knows where. And so the family and their neighbor, their best friend from My Big Fat Greek Wedding, go on a little bit of a road trip, and they start driving out into the wilderness. I still don't understand why. And along the way, there's like some sort of traffic jam, so they get detoured. And then in the process of that detour, Glenn, the best friend's car, he nearly hits some sort of animal. I think it was a deer, and he rolls over into the, you know, and dies basically. He gets stuck. He gets capped. You know, he gets stuck underneath his car, and they couldn't get him out. And he makes too much noise, and all of a sudden these bats show up, and they just start killing him. And eventually, the family gets away. And they find some sort of shelter, again, much like The Happening, at this sort of randomly in the middle of nowhere type of house where there's a crazy old woman.
Get away from these bats.
And yeah, and like it's a crazy old woman, and like she's gone really quickly. And they hide in there for a while. But unfortunately, in the process of doing so, the mother, Miranda Otto, she gets hurt. And so they have to figure out a way to get some antibiotics for, which leads them back into town. And while they're in town, classic. It's only been like a day and a half, and there's already some doomsday cult that's happening. So that's basically the story. I'm spoiling the crap out of it. The reason I'm doing that is because I watched this movie so that you don't have to. And you, Justin, and you listeners.
You know, not all heroes wear capes. You know,
it's
not
true.
All
of them. My wife was out of town for a couple days. I had stuff just to do, and I didn't want to do it, so I watched this instead, and I really wish I would have done my work instead, because this was trash. This was honestly, you know how we've reviewed numerous Netflix original movies, correct? You remember the first one? Remember our very first throwback, Sam Worthington?
What was the name of that, though? I forget the name of it.
It was Titan. It was Titan.
There you go. Yeah, Titan.
And that has long been the barometer for which Netflix movies hopefully will pass. And Justin, I finally found a movie that is worse than it. I honestly feel
like... I find that hard to believe.
I know it's very hard to believe, but the science is so bad, I can't even begin to express how bad it is. It makes no sense. First of all, we're led to believe... like, the threat is so uncertain. It's a bunch of freaking bats, man. It's just a bunch of bats. I don't understand. Like, oh, they're carnivores? Oh, just like most of the freaking natural world are carnivores, and yet we're fine. Do they die to bullets? Oh, they die to bullets. Oh, then exactly why? Finally,
there was projectiles with multiple shots that could deal with these things.
I just don't understand. It's not, you know, it's not like zombies where like, oh, you shoot them a bunch of times. No, you just shoot them. Do they die to fire? Oh, they die to fire. Oh, okay. Do they die to explosions? Oh, they die to explosions. Okay, I understand. If there's one thing America does really
isn't
well,
there also
it's
a
weaponry.
Finite amount of them too. When if it's just in a cave.
See, that's the thing. I don't understand because we're led to believe that they're literally everywhere. Like they're everywhere. Like how are they everywhere? How are they everywhere? Even in like the Riddick movies, where he's on the two like the Riddick, and then Pitch Black, where he's on those movies. He's on those planets that are like. Like, there's still spots of places where the crazy overtaken swarm of whatever alien creature he's dealing with in that movie, there's still spots where they're not there. Not in this movie. Just happened to randomly be on some completely abandoned dirt road in the middle of nowhere. Yep, they're there. Why are they there exactly? How about some random, completely unknown to the world cabin that has some strange survivalist woman living in it? Yep, they're there too. Oh, okay. You know, the only place we actually really didn't see them is actually in their home in their neighborhood where they started the movie, which makes me wonder where the hell they left. And the other thing is, like, they're talking, it's like the classic thing of, oh, you can't make noise around them. Well, I mean, part of the movie, like, whenever they did make noise, if you made enough of it, it just confused them. So, like, at one point, they're in They're in a pharmacy trying to get antibiotics, and they get trapped by these creatures, sort of, and they can't make noise. And so what do? Is they maneuver it so they get the emergency sprinklers to go off, which freaks them the hell out, because it not only has the sprinklers going off, which making a bunch of sound, but also, like, the alarm goes off, and they can't echolocate properly and figure out wherever these people are. I'm like,
also, that's also not necessarily how echolocation works, you know? Even if you don't say things, they'll still find you. Because it's the sound bouncing off of your
body. I don't know if it's full echolocation. That could be me making that. I could have just used that lazily. Or it could just be like the sound. But the point was is that they made a very modest amount of sound. And in doing so, confused these creatures enough that they could get away. Well, I'm sorry, but have you ever been in a big city? I've been in a big city. I've been in New York. I've been in Phoenix. I've been in L.A. Been in Seattle. They're loud. I don't understand how anybody in a big city is in trouble. Because there's so much sound. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Like,
I've been places, all right? I've been to cities.
And I don't understand why, like, anybody who has a window and a door would feel worried right now. I just don't understand. It just doesn't make any sense to me. It's really confusing. So, like, the threat just doesn't make sense. It's just the stupidest threat. I can't even, like, oh, it's so annoying. And then, like, the other thing that really pisses me off in this movie is, like, there's all this, like, forced exposition and thematic stuff on top of it. So because it's a post-apocalyptic movie, of course there's got to be some crazy religious faction that just takes it too far, right? There's got to be that because it's so cliche at this point, right? And so at one point when Kieran Shipka's going, like, her character is, like, trying to communicate with her boyfriend from time to time on their tablets, and so we get a lot of, like, the news reports from her tablet view, and there's all sorts of stuff about, I don't know, like, religious wackadoos going on. And at a certain point, they just happen to stumble into a town where there's a, like, and this is, like, 2 days into their journey. They stumble into this town, and it's only been, like, 2 or 3 days since this stuff happened. There isn't a huge jump in time or anything. And there's this creepy preacher, who actually looks like Preacher from Preacher, in the actual movie, who just is, like, silently stalking them, and then tries to talk to them, and he's, like, he writes out on this amazingly beautiful, like a personal journal that you would think, like, a liberal arts student was, you know, has, and they write their poems in. Like, that's basically what he has. And so he's, like, writing in it, and one of the first things he says, and this is the most awkward line of the whole movie, and he writes it down, and he's like, "Would you like to join my flock, the Hushed?" Like, no comma. And just like, really? We're 2-3 days in and you're already naming it. Seriously? Like, you're the Hushed?
Apocalypse comes at you fast, man.
Yeah, it's so crazy. And like that's just, yeah, it's just insane. And you know what they do? You know what they do, Justin? They cut their tongues out. Because apparently that's how you're silent. I mean, I don't know, man. I think most of the noise I make, other than right now, is made by things that have nothing to do with my tongue. It's
what's
like,
your,
I take...
What's it, what? Where does noise come from, all
right? Right, I jingle what's my keys, mouth? Right? I burp. I don't need a tongue to burp. Do I actually? No. No, I don't think you need a tongue to burp.
I don't think you're just thinking this through well enough, right? This guy knows what he's talking about.
So that's another thing. And of course, he follows them, and he says that the girl, meaning Kieran Shipka, is, like, fertile. I don't know what's going on with there. Because apparently there's some sort of story that's not really, like... I think they are using the bodies of humans, like these creatures, the Vests are using these bodies of humans to just sort of gestate their eggs and stuff like that, which makes me wonder, well, how did they procreate before that? You know, like, I don't understand. Why aren't there so many? Like, this movie is so incredibly bad that I honestly felt that I might not be able to watch any more Stanley Tucci movies for a little while. Like, I need a break from him. Because even though he tried very hard, I feel bad for him because I think he's great and he's got an amazing name and he's got such a distinguished looking visage that what is he doing in this? It's so bad. I understand why Kieran Shipka's in it. She's probably got some sort of Netflix contract because of her television show. And like Miranda Otto, like she was so barely used in this and she's really good too. So this movie was as bad Netflix movies get. And it makes me really sad. It makes me really mad. And if you want to watch a movie that is about post-apocalyptic family troubles and a world where you can't make sound because there's some sort of creature that's trying to attack you, definitely go watch A Quiet Place and never, ever, ever watch The Silence.
I see you did there. You did a little loop-de-loo on that. It's good. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's what I did. So in answer to the question of was this frustrating or scary, it was frustrating and not even remotely scary. Yeah, there you go.
Well, on the brighter side of things, I got all caught up in Doom Patrol. There's like one episode left, and it is amazing. It's probably one of my... No, it's weird. I'm a math teacher, and it checks out. It's probably one of my favorite shows out right now. And I'd never thought it would be something I'd want to watch, especially after they did a little cameo in Titans. And Titans was good, but man, this blows Titans out of the water. This is a truly remarkable TV show, and you gotta watch it. So basically, I'm up to episode 9. I think there's one episode left. So the first couple episodes you had, the only ones I watched was the pilot and Donkey Patrols. Because basically what happens is, Doom Patrol is basically a group of misfits, like lost toys. Basically the best way I can kind of describe it. Because they bring up that reference quite a bit in this TV show. You have Brendan Fraser, you have who plays Robot Man, who's a giant robot man. I've talked about this before. I'm just basically doing like an update to it. So he basically plays a giant robot man who was a NASCAR driver who got in a car wreck. He died. The chief took his brain and put it inside of a giant robot. You have Cyborg, who was the same Cyborg that's from Justice League, but it's played by a different character and he looks different. You have Crazy Jane, who is a woman that's very much like a Legion character. Pretty much is the DC version of Legion. She has basically multiple powers, multiple personalities, and those powers manifest those personalities. You have Elastigirl, who is a woman who used to be a actress in the like 50s, and she got exposed to some stuff. Now she like can uncontrollably turn into a blob, but also has the ability to kind of stretch her body, but she doesn't know how to use it just yet. You also have Negative Man, who's played by the guy from White Collar. And he was a fighter pilot who was possessed by a, like, I guess gamma radiation being who can go in and out of his body. And so these are basically all your main characters. They are led by a man named Chief. Chief is a guy who basically brings them all together, trying to help them out, and sees that they're kind of like people that need help. And their main nemesis is a guy by the name of Mr. Nobody, who's played by Alan Tudyk, who does a fantastic job in this show. He's also the main narrator, and there's lots of really cool things. So as the show has progressed on, it gets weirder and weirder, and it's amazing. And it's not even to the point where it's like almost artsy like Legion. It's just so strange. Like the second episode, a donkey comes in and they have to go inside the donkey to get to where Chief is, because that's where the town where the Doom Patrol lives at has been stored at because of Mr. Nobody. And so like there's a keyhole inside the donkey's throat and they have to go into the donkey. So this is just the beginning. The third episode is Puppet Patrol. It's about finding out where Mr. Nobody got his powers from, and basically each episode is very Lost like, because you have a focused character in each episode, and they kind of like explore their character in each episode as they go through. And every character is very well fleshed out, and it's a really cool character study of each individual person on the team. You first think that Cyborg's not going to be a huge deal of it, but he's the main member of the group. His big thing is he accidentally killed his mother, and he doesn't trust his father because of the stuff that's gone on with his body and stuff like that. You have Mr. Robot, who's dealing with the guilt of his family and with the things he did in the past, and you know, hoping, you know, thinking that he left his daughter to nobody. Crazy Jane thinks she's crazy, and she's got a really, really dark past. She's actually kind of the main character of the show almost, and the person that plays her does a phenomenal job. She plays basically 20 different characters, and each one of them are very unique and different, and it's really cool. Some of them are giant assholes, and some of them are little sweet girls. Some of them are like super powered, but they're all mostly kind of like super unique individual personalities. Elastigirl is dealing with the basically, she thinks that she is a blob and a slug because that's the type of person she was when she was, an actress, and she feels like she's paying penance for it, and so that guilt coming through. Negative Man feels like a freak, not because of his abilities, but because when he was in the Air Force, he was homosexual, and he felt like a freak from that point. And then basically, the Negative Man, the persona that he's created has a lot of tyings to it. And it's just basically a really, really great show. I think it's a fantastic way that they do the show, because it's so strange and weird. They're able to take these super weird characters from golden age comics of DC and really use them, like Mento or Mentalo and the All-Seeing or the Uncreator. One of the great characters in the show, which you would never think would be something funny, is a guy named I think it's Animal Vegetable Mineral Man. And that's a cool little moment in the show. It's like an old villain from a long, long time ago, and it's so stupid, but in the show it's great. You have Danny Street, which is basically a street that is a person, which is a metahuman. That's a great episode. So they're all called like different types of patrols. You have Therapy Patrol, where they all basically have a group therapy session, and it gets kind of personal and cool. There's an unbelievable moment at the end of that particular episode, I will not give it away, which has like the motivation of what happened in the episode, and it's so ridiculous and awesome that I love it. The show is ridiculous, but ridiculously awesome. It's more of a character study than about superpowers. Very rarely do you see superpowers done. Like, I think in the 9 episodes, there's only been a couple fights with superpowers. Most of it's basically just conversations between these broken people and how they are trying to be, how they were being fixed by the chief and trying to find the chief because the chief's been abducted by Mr. Nobody. And they think that he's the only person that can kind of fix who they are. But you're telling throughout the episodes that they're kind of fixing themselves by being heroes and helping each other out and also trying to find the chief. So it's I can't say enough about this show. I can't believe that DC Universe has 2 shows in a row that I really, really like. But, you know, even like the WB shows back in the day, they weren't bad, but they just got a little bit ridiculous and stupid with 22 episode seasons and no one ever dies. It got a little dumb. In the first season of these 2 shows, it's been pretty great. But Doom Patrol really, really has been exceptional. And I can't wait for you to watch it because I want to see how you feel about watching it. Because it's really not about superheroes. It's about...
Yeah, I'm going to do it over the summer. I think that's my plan. Like, I'm going to do it once I'm done with this. Once I'm on my semester and I can pop in there and just burn it off in a week or something.
Because it's not about superheroes. It's about broken people trying to... I guess, escape or forgive themselves for the past and meanwhile trying to find purpose in life. And it's just surrounded by the fact that they're extraordinary beings, but none of them are good people. They're all terrible people. And so it's got kind of that misfit feel of like Guardians of the Galaxy, but you know, it's not, instead of it being cosmic, it's just strange. So it's just really, really great. And everyone acts fantastic. The kid that played Cyborg, when he first started off, I was like, hey, this is kind of sketchy, but now I think he's great. And Cyborg looks great. He looks like old like 80s Cyborg from the comic books, where he looks like he's got kind of like a headband and stuff. It's really, really interesting looking. And it's funny that this lower budget TV show, the Cyborg in it looks 30 times better than the Cyborg in the multi-million dollar Justice League movie. So,
well, they had to spend a lot of money to erase what's his name's mustache. So
yeah, that's what, lost a lot of money in Henry Cavill's mustache. So I think it's a show that needs to get recognition. I really hope that this gets more talk overall. And, you know, I hate buying, you know, this whole a la carte thing of buying different channels. But, you know, it's the way the world's going with entertainment these days, where it's like, if I want to watch these things, like, we're going to get Disney Plus when it comes out because my wife likes all the Disney stuff. And then there's going to be like 6 new Marvel shows. So I'm going to get those. It's interesting how stuff's changed from this, but it's gone so far away from like DirecTV. It's very a la carte. You buy what you want to watch. So
yep, I definitely like the a la carte thing. I just worry that people are overvaluing their content and their pricing. I think isn't like CBS All Access to me. I think is overvaluing their pricing. Like,
there's nothing on CBS that attracts me at all.
There's a Twilight Zone now. Like, for me, Twilight Zone and a new Star Trek show are definitely ones that I would be interested in. I did watch a couple episodes of the new Star Trek show, and it was okay, but I didn't love it. But I'm a huge Twilight Zone fan, so going back to when I was a kid, so that actually might lure me to it.
So anyway, this Doom Patrol's on DC Universe. I highly, highly suggest it. Brendan Fraser does a great job. I miss the Mummy. That's all I'm saying. Brendan Fraser's great. So yeah.
All right, man. So with that behind us, let's go ahead into our Gentleman's Challenge for the week.
And now it's time for the Gentleman's Challenge.
So So the Gentleman's Challenge is a segment we do here on the Lollygaggers podcast where Justin and I like to give each other a homework assignment. This homework assignment usually entails one of us watching a movie or a couple episodes of a television show, maybe reading a comic or playing a game. Then in order to ensure that we completed our homework assignments, we come back on the next episode and we quiz each other about it. And we should warn you that everything we talk about here in the Gentleman's Challenge is spoiler heavy. So if there is some movie or TV show or game that we're covering that you don't want to be spoiled about, it's best to go ahead and experience it first on your own and then come back and listen to the episode when you're ready. With that in mind, Justin, is it my turn? I believe it's my turn. I think
yeah, we'll start off with you today. Sounds good.
So let's start off with a little movie known as The Hateful Eight by a young up-and-comer, Quentin Tarantino.
I like to call it Kurt Russell facial hair version 12. Because, man, that man's got great facial hair.
God, I love Kurt Russell. Like, I just want to say that he is honestly one of my favorite movie actors of all time. He's been in so many movies I love. Some of my favorites, like The Thing, obviously, is one of my favorites. But he's also in, like, Big Trouble in Little China. He was in Tombstone. He was Snake Plissken in, what's it called? In the Escape from L.A. and New York movies. Like, man, that dude's just been in so many things. And Overboard, right? Overboard, which is, honestly, if you really think that movie, it's pretty terrible if you think about the premise.
Yeah, but still, though, it's great. It's great. And it was also Captain Ron. I forget Captain Ron.
I didn't really like Captain Ron. But, I mean, it was Kurt Russell, so it was all right. All right, so here's the premise. The Hateful Eight, most people, I would imagine, are aware of it. It is a Quentin Tarantino movie. It was one of his more recent ones. I want to say 2012. This is actually the first movie, despite Samuel Jackson being in multiple Tarantino movies, where he got first billing. But it also, as we said, not just stars Samuel Jackson, but also Kurt Russell. It's got Jennifer Jason Leigh. It's got Tim Roth, and Michael Madsen, both of whom have appeared in movies before with Quentin Tarantino. It's got Bruce Dern. And it's got my favorite. I love this guy so much. He's honestly one of my favorite actors right now. Walton Goggins. And the reason I love him is because he was on the TV show Justified. He played Boyd Crowder. And I could honestly just listen to Boyd Crowder, played by Walton Goggins, and Raylan Givens, played by Timothy Oliphant, just talk for like 5 hours straight. Just the two of them chat. They could talk about the weather for all I care, but the dialogue between the two of them on that show is great. So Walton Goggins is a personal favorite. So this has a cast that just crushes it for me. The other thing that really sets it up for it to be a movie that I'm going to enjoy is the fact that it's a Western, because I love Westerns, and it's Tarantino, because I do enjoy Tarantino. I'm not like a crazy fanboy over him. Like, there's been movies I like, and there's a movie I don't like. Like, my favorite of his is still Reservoir Dogs. I love that movie so much. And I love Jackie Brown. Like, those are my top two movies. And then I would say, like, after that, like, I like Pulp Fiction, but I don't love it. You know, I liked Kill Bill, but I didn't love it, etc. So I was really looking forward to another one because I think he's just really good. So anyway, the premise of the movie, as I said, it is a Western. It is set sometime after the Civil War, not exactly sure how far, and it's also set in Wyoming. It's broken up into chapters. There are 6 total chapters. They all have their own little subtitles and whatnot. The first 2 chapters take place on the road. What's going on is it's basically there's a blizzard in Wyoming, and there is a series of people who are trying to get to the city of Red Rock, and they're trying to outrun a blizzard. And so Kurt Russell's character, John the Hangman Ruth, is escorting a prisoner, Daisy Dahmer Goose, played by Jennifer Jason Leigh. He is escorting her in a private carriage into Red Rock so she can hang for crimes, because John Ruth is a bounty hunter. He has collected his bounty, and he's going to go and deliver her and get her hanged. Now, along the route in the first chapter, they come across Samuel Jackson's character. Now, Samuel Jackson's character is Marquise Warren, who is a former Union soldier, and he is also a bounty hunter. And he, unlike John Ruth, he just brings his bounties in dead. It's just easier to transport them dead, and it just seems like it's a lot too much work to bring him in alive. And so he's got 3 dead bodies that he is also looking to transport to Red Rock. And so he proceeds to, you know, kind of talk his way onto the stagecoach. And then they get on the stagecoach and they start traveling. Now, eventually, in chapter 2, they come across Walton Goggins' character, who is Chris Mannix, who is actually a former rebel soldier, a lost causer militiaman, I believe is the specific term. And he is the new, he is going to be the new sheriff, if you believe him, of Red Rock, and he needs to get there. And so he also talks his way onto the stagecoach. And so the four of them, so you got John Ruth, you've got Daisy Domergue, you've got, Chris Mannix, and you have Marquise Warren, who all, are traveling on this stagecoach now being led by OB, who is the guy who's actually, driving the carriage. Now, they can't outrun the blizzard too much, so they can't get all the way to Red Rock, and so they have to bunker down at Minnie's Haberdashery, and that's where Chapter 3 starts. So Minnie's Haberdashery is just this this kind of mixture of store and stables and bar and maybe even an inn that just sort of is there kind of on the road. And so all of them have to bunker down there as the for a couple days as the blizzard hits. And they are joined at that place because there's already a few people that are there by a handful of other people, including the wonderful Oswaldo Mowbray, who is played by Tim Roth, who is having, I think, way too much fun with that character. Joe Gage, who's this quiet cowboy guy who sits in a corner. He's played by Michael Mattson. It's got Sanford Smithers, who's played by Bruce Dern, and he is a former Confederate general. There's also, I can't remember the man's name, who actually, I think it's just Joe, his name is Joe, and he is the guy who's, like, supposedly in charge of Minnie's Haberdashery, because Minnie is not there, neither is her husband or the people who normally work there, and Joe is watching over it for a little while she goes and visits her mom. And so as the chapter three kind of gets around, they all start like talking and eating and people start having these various conversations. And you start realizing that there's a lot of conflict between most of the people now that are in this room, including some of which going back to the war, to the Civil War. And so specifically, there is Bruce Dern's General Smithers and Samuel Jackson's Marquise Warren, and the two of them, actually it's Bob, it's Mexican Bob, that was his name, not Joe, my bad, because there's Joe Gage, and then there's Mexican Bob. So then basically what happens is there's a series of conversations as people start recognizing each other. There's a lot of overlapping between some of the storylines that are going on, and Samuel Jackson's character recognizes the general, and as they're eating dinner, kind of goads him into tries to goad the old man into trying to attack him, and which he successfully does by telling him a story about how Samuel Jackson basically not just killed his son, but a lot of other really bad things too before he actually killed him. And then
I wanted to almost think of a question to give you to describe what happened on a PG podcast, but it'd be nearly impossible.
I mean, it's called fellatio, which is a word, and you can look it up if you don't know what it means. So what basically happens is Samuel Jackson goads Bruce Dern into trying to kill him, but in the process of doing so, Samuel Jackson then kills Bruce Dern's character. And so while this distraction's going on, while all this kind of crazy stuff is going on, Chapter 4 begins, and Chapter 4 reveals the same incident, but from the semi-perspective of Daisy Domergue, who this whole time has been kind of attached to Kurt Russell, who is very abusive towards her in his custody, constantly hitting her. But at a certain point, as they're eating, she notices somebody poisons the coffee. And this then leads towards two new people dying, and that's both OB, sadly, who just did everything, he was such a good guy, he seemed like the only decent person there, and Kurt Russell's character both dying from poisoning as they very gruesomely begin to vomit up all sorts of blood and guts, etc., etc. Then this leads to a kind of showdown in some way where Marquise, Samuel Jackson's character, is trying to deduce who exactly poisoned the coffee, and is trying to figure out who might be working with Daisy Domergue. And the only people left at this point are him and Chris Mannix, who is the only one that he actually trusts at this point. So the two of them kind of pair up in a little bit, because Chris Mannix was about to drink the coffee, and he's like, there ain't no way somebody would nearly drink the coffee if they knew it was going to kill him like that. And so he takes Tim Roth, and he takes the Mexican Bob guy, and he takes uh, he takes Michael Madsen's character and he puts them all up against a wall and he starts asking questions and making some deductions. And this whole time, he's never actually trust the guy who's claiming to have been left in charge of Minnie's haberdashery. There's a variety of reasons, but they're really funny. The funny one, but it also it's a really awful one because it's a racial joke. But it's because Minnie hated Mexicans. And there's no way that Minnie would have left a Mexican in charge of the thing that she loved the most in the world. So then what happens is Mexican Bob gets just completely and brutally killed. And then just as they're about to kill more people, somebody beneath the floorboards who's been hiding this whole time shoots off Samuel Jackson's nuts. That's just what happens because Tarantino likes doing that in his movies. Then we get a new chapter.
He says, say adios to your huevos. And blows him off.
Yeah, why didn't you just make that a quiz question? Okay. So then we move into chapter 5. And chapter 5 is when we get a little bit of a flashback. And we get a flashback to earlier, maybe about a day or like a day earlier or earlier that day when the people that we knew as Samuel Jackson's character and Kurt Russell's character, etc., actually arrived. Another stagecoach arrived carrying 4 passengers. And these 4 passengers were Mexican Bob, Tim Roth's character, Joe Gage, played by Michael Madsen, and also Jody, who is played by the always adorable Channing Tatum. And Channing Tatum is apparently the brother of Daisy Domergue, and he's trying to get her. And they're setting a trap to free her from John Ruth. And so we see what actually happened, and they slaughter everybody who was working at the haberdashery. They kill Minnie, they kill Minnie's husband, they kill some of the other stagecoach drivers, they kill a woman who was actually just assisting Minnie, and the only person they leave alive is Bruce Dern's character because they want authenticity, and so they make a deal with Bruce Dern to just sit there and act like an old man. Doesn't really work out too well for them. And so then the final chapter comes, and what happens in this final chapter, everyone's kind of injured and whatever. And so in order to lure Channing Tatum out from below the floorboards, they threaten to kill Daisy Domergue, and he comes up. He's like, okay, I'll do it. And he throws all of his guns up. And as he comes up, he kind of looks at his sister, and they have like a moment and they smile at one another, and then freaking Samuel Jackson just blows Channing Tatum's head off and she freaks the hell out. I shouldn't laugh because he just got his head blown off, but man, it was funny.
He blows his brains into her face.
It was disgusting, but also very funny. Like a shootout ensues. I can't remember if it happened then or just before that happened, where not only does Samuel Jackson get shot, but so does Walton Goggins' character, Chris Mannix. He gets shot in the side. Tim Roth's character gets shot not once but twice. So then at this point, the final sequence is Daisy Domergue trying to convince Walton Goggins' character, Chris Mannix, to side with her and to side with Tim Roth and to side with Michael Madsen, as opposed to trying to side with the bounty hunter Samuel Jackson. But Walton Goggins eventually he's like no, like, you're ridiculous, even though she's threatening them and stuff like threatening him and like promising him extra money. Long story short, everybody dies, but not before both Samuel Jackson and Walton Goggins hang Daisy Domergue in honor of John the Hangman Ruth, Kurt Russell's character, who said anybody can shoot a bounty, but John always wanted to hang him because when you get caught by the hangman, you know you're going to get hanged. And so that's the movie. So what did I think of it? I thought it was great. I loved it. It was fantastic. It was like a Western meets The Thing. And as I was doing a little reading about it, like, Tarantino apparently was quoted as saying that his two influences were Reservoir Dogs and The Thing. Those are two of my favorite movies of all time. And it's also kind of weird that one of his influences was his own movie, but whatever. But I love Reservoir Dogs. It's my favorite Tarantino movie. I love The Thing. It is my favorite movie. This is a movie where in Hateful Eight, where there's a group of bad people with histories that don't trust one another, that are trapped in a confined location with different motivations. There's this wonderful bottle story where it just the pressure begins to mount and people's motivations become revealed over time. It's a little bit of a mystery. And even though no one really gets out alive, I mean, I don't care. It was still a great experience. Like, it was just so good. It was funny at times, even though that fun, that humor is often darkly comic. Like I said, when I was, I burst out laughing when I saw Channing Tatum's head get blown off. And like, that's an awful thing that just happened, but I still laughed at it for whatever reason because of the timing of it. There's all sorts of, you know, horrible, filthy language, crazy racial relations, all sorts
of... Or even like when Kurt Russell first vomits up the blood. It's so shocking. Oh,
it's terrible.
But yeah. It's also like,
what the hell just happened, right? There are moments like where like he's very abusive towards Daisy Domergue. I mean, like, granted, she's a murderer, but she's also in custody. And then it's the idea of like the abuse that's going on, generally. It's all like... There's some uncomfortable things that are going on, but at the same time, it was still really enjoyable. And despite the excessive violence, I mean, it's Tarantino. Like, you know what you're getting into, and I'm totally fine with it. Like, that stuff doesn't bother me at all. But if it does bother you, you know damn well not to watch it, right? Like, you shouldn't be watching a Tarantino movie if you're not a person who's willing to watch, excessive violence and depiction of that violence, right? I thought Samuel Jackson was amazing. Like, Samuel Jackson's pretty much amazing in everything he's in, like, even when he just mails it in. But this one, he seemed committed, and man, he was so good. Like,
writing for his character, because this movie is just basically a series of monologues, pretty much. It's almost like a stage show.
Monologues and conversations, yeah.
Yeah, and the writing really shows in this film, but he in particular does a great job. When he's talking to the general or the colonel, that whole sequence is just so well acted out. And I think
it's awful. Like, what's going on? So he's telling this story because the general is going up into Wyoming to figure out what happened to his son. Well, his son encountered Warren, Samuel Jackson's character, in the past, and so Samuel Jackson decides to tell him the story and just goad him into trying to kill him, and then it allows Samuel Jackson actually to kill him too. It's very much like a stage play, right? It's very much like that. There's not any like these like crazily flamboyant sets. There's not a ton. I mean, like, this obviously the
it's blood just effects, one like setting effects. Just one setting.
Well, there's two because there's the stagecoach in on the road, but then there's also the haberdashery. So there's like kind of two main pieces to that, and that's really it. And like, the first two chapters are all stagecoach, and then the next four chapters are all in the haberdashery and around the haberdashery, right? Also common to Tarantino is like a non-linear storytelling, meaning like there's stuff that transpires that goes out of sequence, and that's exactly what happens here. Like, Tarantino always kind of plays with that to some degree in all of his movies, like out of sequence storytelling, often playing with point of view so that there's things that we as viewers are getting that we don't understand the context of yet. So in this particular case, we didn't understand that all of these people that were already there in the haberdashery were actually all together waiting for John Ruth to show up with Daisy. And we get that. We don't get that until chapter five. We don't get that until chapter five towards the very end at that little flashback scene. But there's also things that we know that characters don't necessarily know as well, you know. So it's a pretty interesting thing. I always like the way he tells stories, even though, you know, sometimes it can get difficult to follow for some people. But I totally enjoyed it. I don't really have it. I guess my only major gripe with it is that I felt it was also a little long at times. I felt like it. There are times that I
think it's a 3-hour movie.
It's 3 hours, and it's.
But it's a lot of like long shots. And
right.
Building tension and setting stages, and because like a lot like The Thing, one of the characters in the movie is the environment that they're in, right? And so like they're really setting the stage of this Wyoming blizzard snowy place, and the opening scene is like 10 minutes of just looking at a statue. It's ridiculous.
I know. So like the opening, so the opening credits is extended, like it's very long, very slow, and we're looking at what is basically a cross for like a grave or something like that, while off in the distance the stagecoach is coming, and it's off in the distance, and we watch it in real time as it slowly comes up and the camera slowly pans out, and we get a whole mess load of credits. And there's a lot of other scenes like that where I think Tarantino just sort of lingers just because he wants us, like you said, build tension. I think there are times when we know something's about to happen. I do feel like there's some of the conversations were a little bit awkwardly broached, but you know, I guess that's bound to happen. Like, how else are you gonna get that information out there but through conversation? But sometimes it felt a little awkward, but that also could have been the intention of trying to create kind of a 19th century diction, like the way they talk, every one of them having like some sort of like overly stylized, almost overly formal way of speech in some ways. But I mean, these are, again, I nitpick. Like, overall, the movie was great. Like, I do think it could have probably been about 20 to 30 minutes faster in some respects. But even the extra 20 to 30 minutes, it was well shot. The cinematography was beautiful. The score, the guy who actually did the score for this, the same dude did the score for The Thing, apparently, or at least some of the music that was used for this apparently was unused stuff from The Thing, which was fascinating. I can't remember his name. I think his first name is like Anicio. I can't remember his last name though. I'm sorry. And then there's, you know, not only that, but like the performances from all the actors and actresses, they're great. Like, they're all fantastic. So like, there wasn't a person in that whole, in the whole cast who was really, you know, not carrying their weight. I think Michael Madsen would probably be the only one, but I think that's not because I think he wasn't carrying his weight. He just wasn't given a whole lot to do. Like, even though Tim Roth's character was smaller, like, when he had the stage, boy, did he have the stage. Like, he was given a lot to work with. Like, he just, this kind of flamboyant British guy that just was pretty fantastic. But anyway, I absolutely love this movie. I highly recommend it if you haven't seen it again. It's definitely in my top three for Tarantino movies. It's definitely up there now with Jackie Brown and with Reservoir Dogs for me. I put it ahead of Pulp Fiction. I put it ahead of Inglourious Basterds. I put it ahead of Django Unchained and Kill Bill. It's definitely top three for me.
All right, so ready for your quiz question?
I am indeed, sir. Go right ahead.
All right, so what is the communication system that Kurt Russell's character set up with Daisy Domergue? He said, I'm going to set up a communication system.
So basically it's like, what is it? It's something like when I hit you, it's like when I elbow you in the face, when I elbow you like real hard in the face, that means like be quiet or shut up or something like that. Is that right?
Yeah, he goes, when I elbow you in the face, that means shut the hell up. You think you can get that?
Yeah, it's such an awful line, but I can't help but chuckle at it. But it's just so awful if you really think about it.
Anyway, all right, yeah. So describe in thoroughness how you open and close the door, which I thought was a great addition to the story because every time that there was a high level of tension brewing, the door opens, you know, and it creates like a break in the tension, but like a startling break in the tension. So explain.
So this happened multiple times because like there's crazy wind, crazy snow going on outside, and the cold itself just leaks in into this place. So the door busts open, but the door is broken. And so what they have to do each time, whenever the door is opened and they want to close it, they have to hold the thing shut, and then they have to put not one, but two boards they have to hammer into the wall and into the door to keep it closed. And so then whenever somebody needs to open it up, they have to kick it open, right, from the outside coming in. And then they have to redo the damn thing over and over again. So it's someone's holding the door shut, and then there's not one, but two boards that you have.
You got to use two boards!
Got to use two boards! Yeah. Oh, my God. Jeez.
All right. What is the bar in their negotiation, Oswaldo sets everything up. So what's the bar?
Oh yeah. So like at a certain point, Oswaldo, Tim Roth's character, tries to play peacemaker because there's a whole lot of like Union versus Confederacy tension going on, because Walton Goggins' character and Bruce Dern's character were both Confederate soldiers, and you have obviously Marquise Warren, a Union and former slave. So there's so much tension there. And then and as a way early on to try to create peace, he was like, okay, we're just going to separate the haberdashery into two different places. And so the fireplace was like Georgia, and then the bar was Philadelphia.
That is correct, sir. It is Philadelphia.
Yeah.
All right, my next question. Why did they keep the old man alive? You actually answered this. So why did they keep the old man alive when they first...
For authenticity. So the old man is Bruce Dern's character. It's General Smithers. And so as the four strangers, so the crew, the gang that is Jody, who is played by the always delightful and goofy Channing Tatum. And then you also got Tim Roth's character, Michael Madsen's character, and you've got Mexican Bob. The four of them slaughter everybody, but because they want an air of authenticity and they wanted to make it look like this is like a homey place, they leave the old man alive because they just need it. Yeah, it's just authenticity. They make it look authentic.
That is correct, sir. All right. Next question. The question is, Walton Goggins is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the question.
He's damn awesome. I love that guy. If you haven't watched Justified, the show that was on FX,
he's great in everything. In The Shield,
watch that show. Oh, he was great show. I'm serious though. The combination of Timothy Oliphant and Walton Goggins when everyone in the scene together in Justified is just absolutely amazing. Like
he's also like the best part in Ant-Man and the Wasp. He was fantastic in that too. Like Walton Goggins is great in everything he does. All right. That was the next question. You got that one correct. All right. So next question. What life debt does Quentin Tarantino owe to Michael Madsen to seemingly personally finance his entire life with a movie every 10 years? So what is it that Michael Madsen or that Quentin Tarantino, or how did Michael Madsen save Quentin Tarantino to make it so that like he has to give him a movie every
So I do actually have a theory for this. My theory isn't so much that. It's more of he's seen Quentin Tarantino kill a guy. Like I feel like Quentin Tarantino at some point, because he's so ultra violent, probably would just want to at some point. And this is totally speculation. None of this is real. Blah 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 blah. I feel like Quentin Tarantino probably killed a guy at some point. And Michael Madsen was there, and then in order to ensure Michael Madsen's silence. Whenever Michael Madsen isn't doing too well in his career, needs to kind of get back on his feet.
Quentin Tarantino says, every 5 to 10 years, pretty
which
much.
which is like every other year. Quentin Tarantino offers him a gig, so that's my theory.
Do you think it has something to do with leaving dead people on his lawn? Yeah, something to do with it too, maybe. certain types of people on his lawn. What I'm saying is Michael Madsen, the wolf. Of Quentin Tarantino's life. Is that what's happening right now?
Could be. The wolf reference to good old Pulp Fiction. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So you're 6 for 6, my friend. I think that was a
good
one.
That's pretty good, man. That's a 6 for 6.
I'm sure I'll be the same. Yeah. So I'm going to give you a run for your money, pal. So here we
go. All right, man. All right. So what did you have to do this week?
All right. So my movie that you challenged me to is a brand new movie that's on Hulu. It's a Hulu original. Called I'm Just Effing With You, all right? And it's directed by Adam Mason with writers Scott Barkin and Greg Zenitor. There you go. It stars Hayes McArthur, Jessica McName, and Keir O'Donnell. So most of these people I've never seen before. I feel like I've seen...
I wonder, by the way, if her last name is Jessica McName?
No.
No, I think that might be what it is. No, I'm not sure, but I think that makes more sense.
No. Anyways, Hayes McArthur, I feel like I've seen him in something before, but I don't know what it is. He plays Chester. So basically, the story is a guy by the name of Larry, played by Keir O'Donnell, is headed to a wedding. As he's heading to this wedding, he plays he basically goes on social media and kind of like catfishes or anonymously trolls people on the internet, including the ex-girlfriend whose wedding he's going to. And he's basically a terrible person. He's mean to people all the time anonymously. He's kind of a giant dickhead. But he's this meek little piece of garbage that doesn't really stand up for himself, but he feels like this... He feels this internet strength where he can basically... He's basically the quintessential troll of the internet. His sister, played by Jessica McName, like I said the first time, is played by Rachel Adams, or she plays Rachel, which is his sister. So my mouth hurts.
You're all over the place right now.
Anyways, his sister Rachel is supposed to be meeting him at this hotel. The hotel he goes to is the Pink Motel, and he shows up there, and this guy named Chester's at the bar with a biker guy, and he's trying to get a room. And Chester automatically starts being hostile with him, saying, like, dude, you got a problem? You know, we can fight if you want. And then, like, his first, you know, he's kind of creating this weird tension between him. And then all of a sudden he just goes, I'm just effing with you. So basically that's the kind of rolling theme of this movie, because this movie came out during April Fool's, and so it's like a giant April Fool's type of, like, every other minute the guy, like, screwing with him. So he pays him money to get a room. There's tension between Larry and Gary, or Jerry. It's Jerry, right? Gerald.
It's Gerald, and I think it's, yeah, so Jerry.
Yeah, so there's tension between Larry and Gerald the biker, because Gerald the biker's a crazy giant biker guy. And it's just weird. And Larry's just this meek little twerp who just doesn't want to be involved with anything. So, like, he eventually gets his keys. Then again, Chester tries to screw with him and say, you didn't pay me. He's like, oh, I did pay you. He goes, I can only take credit cards. And he's trying to, almost like he's extorting him for another $75. And again, he goes, I'm just effing with you. So he gets him to his room. Goes to his room. While he's in his room, he kind of, like, settles in. Gets his laptop out, sees pictures of his ex-girlfriend / the woman he's going to go see the wedding of, and then he pleasures himself to her Facebook, because that was a weird moment of the movie. He also goes on to Yelp or like a TripAdvisor thing and bashes the hotel. Meanwhile, he kind of knows that there's cameras in the ventilation system that's involved. Throughout the night, Chester keeps screwing with him. There's also a moment on the television where it sounds like a woman got caught in head-on traffic and got killed on the road towards the motel. So Larry thinks it's his sister because he can't get a hold of her. He texts her like 16 times. She doesn't get back. He freaks out. He confronts Chester about if he got any messages from him. Chester's acting strange and says he knows her name, but like Larry never told him. And so he calls the cops. The cops come, and Chester's like, I don't know what you're talking about, man. Everything's fine. And the cops get kind of, like, suspicious about Larry. At the same time, Larry's sister shows up. And there's just conflict constantly going on because, like, Chester's just screwing with him the whole time. Like, he pretends that Larry punches him in the face. He's just trying to get out of everything. So Rachel and Larry finally kind of settle down. The cop goes away and says, if I have to get called out here again, I'm taking you with me. And they go back to the hotel room. Chester shows up and says, I'm here to bring you some drinks to kind of apologize for what happened before. They all go out to the pool, have a few drinks. Larry tells Chester about everything that's going on with this girl and all the you know, used to be his ex-girlfriend, and it's all very kind of awkward. He's got this note for her that he's going to give her to kind of, like, end all the, you know, the stuff that's going on, kind of, like, be an atom bomb at the wedding. And so that all happens. They eventually go back to the room in the middle of the night. The biker guy wakes up and notices that there's a penis that's been drawn on his motorcycle, and Chester did it. And Chester comes out and is like, dude, I was just messing with you. I didn't know you'd be so upset. So the biker guy then attacks Chester, and Chester knocks him out. And as he's trying to crawl after him, he shoves a knife in his ear. So then you find out that Chester's kind of a psychopath. During this, so they kind of see him die. He says, I'll call the cops. I'll get him here. They go to the main office. While they go to the main office, they stumble into the restaurant. In the restaurant, they see the two previous owners are dead in there. Chester shows up and says this whole story about how that the man was a pervert and would spy on people in their rooms, and she confronted him, and they killed each other. But it's all just kind of a cover of the fact that he's a serial killer and killed all them. The cops show up. When the cops show up, they want to show the cop the stuff that's going on. Rachel hits him in the head with a vodka bottle. And while they're escaping, the cops show up. They kind of, like, he shoots Larry in the back with a taser, and then the cop goes to try and, like, subdue him. As he's coming back, Chester takes one of his handcuff things that's made out of zip tie and puts it around the cop's neck and kills the cop. And see what happens next. Then he lets them go, but before he lets them go, he puts a whole bunch of party favors in the exhaust of the car, so the car, like, stalls out within the first, like, 3 minutes of them driving, so he chases them down. He then gives Larry laughing gas to set him out and gives Rachel laughing gas to put her out. They then wake up, and he gave Larry a whole bunch of ayahuasca to kind of, like, make him come out of his skin and be the true person that he is. And during this time, he kind of, like, gets a camera phone out and he records a confession that he is this troll on the internet that's been basically screwing with everybody for a long time. He takes the note, takes a picture of it, sends it all on social media. He basically destroys Larry's life. He also, at this time, says, okay, you can go see your sister. He goes in the room and turns out that he injected his sister with bleach and killed her. And so basically Larry's life is ruined. He wants to die. So he says, you know, it'd be great for a final joke because it's hilarious. This whole thing you've been doing is hilarious. It'll be even more funny is if you put me in the car with my sister and you just roll my car off the hill into the wedding ceremony. That'd be great. That'd be hilarious because that would be great. So they all go into the car. And when they're leaving, Chester's in the front seat. Rachel's dead in the back and Larry's in front. He's all like still hopped up on ayahuasca and going crazy. But he set up a plan where I guess a long time ago when Rachel had a dog, she always liked him in the front seat. So she disabled the airbags in the front seat. So Chester's not wearing a seatbelt. And so basically he drives the car into a wall, killing Chester. But then at the end, during like the credit sequence, all of it's blamed on Larry, and Larry kind of embraces it and says that, yeah, I've killed all them and I'll kill you too. Cause his life is over. So he's kind of like become this serial killer, even though he did nothing other than avenge his sister and killing Chester. And so basically it's just a movie of just a series of awful things that happen and a guy who's just kind of a psychopath and weirdo. So what did I think of it? It was fine. Wasn't scary. Wasn't terribly surprising. The guy who acted as Chester, Hayes MacArthur, did a decent job. The only thing I think I don't like about this movie is you don't care. The main character is such a dickhead that you kind of want him to die because he's really an awful person. Like, he is basically what everybody hates about the internet. And so, like, when he's getting tortured and stuff, I don't care because he's an awful, awful person. So, like, there's no sympathy I have for the main character. There's nothing I can identify with that main character. He's just a piece of shit, and I don't want to sympathize for a guy who acts like
that. Wait. You can't sympathize with a person who anonymously criticizes others on the internet?
I use my name. You come to my house talking about Justin Bice. You want to call me up, just send me an email on Lollygary. That's fine. I'm not an honest about it. If you think I'm wrong, go ahead and let me know. This guy is a piece of garbage, and I couldn't have any sympathy for the guy. You know, everyone has bad times. Everyone has bad relationships. He kind of went the whole wrong way of dealing with it, and I don't have any sympathy for that type of crap. So, but the thing I did like.
But the thing is, are you supposed to feel sympathy for him? I'm not sure you're supposed to feel sympathy.
I don't know if you are, but it just made the thing where, like, I kind of was rooting for Chester. You know, I kind of was.
I think that's the point. I mean, the only sane character in the whole movie is the sister, right? She's the only one decent, right? And like, so she's the tragic one who dies. But like, I don't think this is supposed to be a movie where you're supposed to like feel sympathy. I think you're actually supposed to actively dislike the main character. Like, it's so overtly handled. Like, everything you know about him is he's so unpleasant. Yeah, I don't think there's any attempt. I think it's actually the inverse, is that you're supposed to dislike him,
which is fine. Like, I think that's an interesting kind of quality of the movie, but like in the end, I think it almost seemed like the whole experience was a little bit devalued for me because I found no redeemable quality about this guy. But in the end, like, the movie's fine. I don't have anything wrong with it. It's just, you know, it's just weird. It's the best I can describe. It's just a weird movie. I don't think it's a bad movie. I thought the acting was fine. I thought the storyline was interesting. But, like, I feel, like, indifferent towards it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't
feel bad about it. I feel like it's totally fair to say this is... I mean, like, to me, I think it's above average. Like, I don't think it's, like, crazily above average. But I do think it's above average. You know what I mean? Because I do feel like the two main characters of Chester and Larry, I think, are so strange and the interactions so uncomfortable at times that I just think it works in some sort of strange way. Like, I do feel like the sister is a little bit squandered, and I kind of actually wish there were moments when even Jerry was more involved as well. Like, there are times where I feel like they could have done a little bit more with some interaction, but like overall, like, I think it's actually pretty solid. This, by the way, like, we didn't really mention this, but this is part of who's been doing an Into the Dark series. And so every month they put out a new movie that is Twilight Zone-y, you know, in the sense that it's kind of horror-y, and they've had a couple of these prior. But this was April's version, and honestly, I think that of all the ones that I've seen thus far, like, I think this is the best one. I certainly think it's the best one. Like, I think it's got a pretty tight story. It's pretty straightforward. The setting's really good. The main villain, I think, is quite interesting.
I like the lighting and stuff of the movie. Like, everything's kind of just extreme. It looks really good. Colors. And there's a lot of, like, set pieces that I enjoy. And there's a lot of things about the movie that there's nothing wrong with it. It's just, in the end, to me, it was just kind of like, that was all right. It wasn't.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's bad. Like, yeah, again, I don't think it's stellar, but at the same time, like, for a Hulu original, I think this is pretty good. You know, I think when you take that into consideration, that it's not.
When you compare it to Silence, you know,
it's. Oh, God, this is by far and away better than Silence. Like, this, Hulu's original here crushed Netflix's original. By the way, Hayes MacArthur, you probably recognize him. He's been in a bunch of things, but you specifically probably recognize him from Super Troopers 2. He was one of the Mounties. So
yeah.
You would totally recognize him. I mean, like, he doesn't have like the shaggy beard and hair, so he's like all clean shaven. But yeah, you would 100%.
He had like a mustache and stuff.
I thought he might have been clean shaven. I'm not sure. I can't remember. But I know he didn't. He wasn't like a big bushy hair and, you know, like half scraggly beard. Okay. Anyway, so solid, but not like. Amazing. It's definitely not one.
Yeah.
It's on fine. Your list to watch, but don't necessarily, you know, like, and I would definitely say watch it at some point, especially if you like suspense movies. Like, this is
weird somewhat Twilight suspenseful. Zone-y,
it's, yeah, it's weird, and it I think it has some really, I think, kind of modern plays with like the whole trolling. I like the idea of the comeuppance of the troll, and it's pretty good as well. So you ready for your quiz?
I am ready.
Question number one. Throughout the movie, Larry, as you said, is a internet troll, and he frequently posts to a specific hashtag on his Twitter feed to troll various people. What is the hashtag that he has been posting to?
It is, oh boy. It's just I tried thinking of it during the conversation, during my description, I tried thinking of it. It is.
This is right now where he's typing. Hashtag from I'm just effing with you. Hashtag.
It is.
There he goes. He's looking for it right now. You can kind of tell. His head's kind of coming closer to the mic. And backing away. Coming closer to the mic. Back away.
It's hard to concentrate when you're talking.
Moving around. He can't type and talk and move his head at the same time. It's very confusing for him.
All right. I'm going to guess it is like. It's not spammer. It's not hacker. Something engineer or something like that.
Sorry, Justin. That is the incorrect answer. You're not even going in the right direction. You're thinking of his handle, which was programming flaw.
Oh yeah, programming flaw.
But I'm asking for the hashtag, which was Cindy and Mark's wedding.
Oh yeah, I was thinking of the name of
over and over again.
Yeah, I was way off. That's fine.
You're on the right track towards his handle, but that was unfortunately not what I was.
I was thinking of the wrong thing though. So yeah, you're fine. That's fine.
So, Justin, Chester says, Chester's a wonderful character, by the way. I think Hayes MacArthur did such a good job in this movie. I can't even, he was so good. Anyway, in this movie, he says that there are two things that he is. There's nothing if he's not these two things. What are those two things?
Oh, no. Is it...
This is during a peaceful moment when he and Larry and Rachel are all kind of getting along.
They're at the pool. Is one of them like true to himself? Like he says what he thinks.
And what is the second thing?
He's always happy. I think it's something like that.
Both of those are incorrect.
Oh, okay, you know, I was close.
Chester is a maker of cocktails and a purveyor of jokes.
Purveyor of jokes.
Yes.
I know. I should have that one.
Maker of cocktails and purveyor of jokes. Okay. Question number three. This might have been my favorite subtle, hilarious line in the whole movie. What is the most honest expression of marriage Chester has ever seen?
Oh, when the husband and wife killed each other.
That is correct. That is correct. So Chester as a serial killer, has taken over the Pink Motel from John and Sherry. They're very much like the Hateful Eight. There was an owner that was killed, and then somebody else took over and was behaving.
A lot of parallels.
It's very strange. It's actually a very similar premise. And so as he's going, as the reveal's happening, you find their bodies in the walk-in freezer, which I knew exactly where that's where they were going to be because we passed by the walk-in freezer earlier as we were talking about them. So I'm like, one of these days, just go ahead and open that door and see what's inside. So anyway, they kill each other, partly because John, the man, had installed those cameras and was being a perv and secretly filming people. Sherry caught out, and they ended up trying to, they were at each other's throat, killing each other, et cetera, et cetera. And that was the most honest expression of marriage Chester had ever seen. So really funny, subtle, hilarious line. Okay, that is correct. Excellent. Well done, sir. Question number 4. What song is playing when Larry wakes up by the pool?
Is it Every Little Thing's Gonna Be All Right?
That is incorrect, Justin. Wow. We get it almost every night when that moon is big and bright. It's a supernatural delight. Everybody is dancing in the moonlight. That would be the correct answer. Dancing in the moonlight. Yeah, there you go. That's the song. Oh, man. When that moment happened, I'm like, this is such a good song. I like this song. Okay. Question number 5. You already mentioned that you paid attention during the post credits, so hopefully you'll get this answer. We are both Reddit users. More recently, me, I've been using Reddit for a very long time. And so there was a Reddit thread in the post-title sequence as we were getting the montage of what happened post-car crash, last scene of the movie. What was the Reddit thread post-title? Do you recall?
All I can remember was he's an awful human being and should die. Something like that. That's all I can remember. Deserves to die.
The title was Serial Killer, Sister Murderer, Little Bitch. I thought that was a good trio. I like that. I thought that was good. All right, Justin. So unfortunately, you were unable to match my 6 for 6.
All right, I must have been close. I was at 5?
Let me go ahead and like quickly add. Okay, 0 + 0 + 1 + 0 + 0 = 1. Okay, so you got one.
Hold on. Go those numbers one more. Could you crunch those numbers one more time?
Yeah, 0 + 0.
No,
plus
crunch
one.
You gotta crunch
0. Okay, 0 + 0 = 0. Uh-huh. Plus 1 = 1. Plus 0 is 1. Plus 0 is 1.
Yeah, but there are any modifiers in that we didn't think about?
No, it's just 1.
That's all it. Right, you know, I'll have to accept it. You know, sometimes
I feel like I summarily crushed you. I win more often than not, but this was a spanking. This is what this was. All right, you ready for new challenges?
Yeah, sure.
All right, Justin, I would like you to watch on Netflix with Katie Sackhoff, the starbuck of one of your favorite television shows of all time. I would like you to watch a movie that it's been popping up on my damn Netflix recommended popular type.
Is it Big Mouth? Is it that
nope.
show Big Mouth? Because
nope.
It makes sense.
This is. Oh, that's so mean. That is not even funny. Oh God, I mean it's funny, but it's so mean. No, this is 2036 Origin Unknown. It is a sci-fi cyberpunk type movie where she plays. I'm not sure if she's the only actress in the movie. Like, she might be the only one on screen most of the time. But there you go. 2036, Origin Unknown.
All right, so I have a movie for you. I'm a huge fan of The Rock, right? And I will watch and enjoy almost every movie you made.
Recently came out a couple weeks ago on HBO.
What's that?
I can't remember what it's called.
Skyscraper or Rampage? Well, they both came out.
Skyscraper. I just watched Skyscraper when I late one night when I was on my work trip. I just put it on and I watched it. Wow. That wasn't any good. And I saw Rampage like a couple months back and that wasn't any good either.
Still, it's The Rock, so it's going to be some level.
Yeah. So what do you got for me? Which Rock movie? I've probably seen him, by the way.
It's like an older one. It's got, I believe it's got Johnny Knoxville in it. It's called Walking Tall. All right.
Yeah, I remember Walking Tall. Yeah,
you're not going to watch that. You're going to watch the sequel starring Kevin Sorbo on Amazon called Walking Tall, The Payback. That's on Amazon.com.
I actually think I've seen this before. By the
well,
way.
You're gonna have to
I
watch
think
it
I might
again.
Have. I might. Have, no, I'll do it again. I'll definitely watch it again. Well,
the other choice would be Rollerball or Attack Force Z.
Now, is Kevin Sorbo really in this, or is it kind
of
like
he's the guy in the middle Mythica, of the DVD box? I
where
hope
he's
in
on the well, he was there as well with Mythica, and then suddenly I see him for like 5 minutes and he's gone.
Right? I just hope he's in it more because I love me some Kevin Sorbo.
Walking Tall. Lone Justice, right? That's what I got here. After cleaning up...
There's Walking right. Tall, The Payback. That's the one I'm talking about.
Oh, well, apparently he's also in Walking Tall, Lone Justice.
So I hope this is the third one. That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping.
I think Walking Tall, Lone Justice might be the third one because... Oh, yeah, because it says after cleaning up his town. So I'm guessing the other one...
All right, good. Then you won't lose any context. That'll be good. That's what I was worried about. Okay. So you're going to watch
The Payback. I
think
I've seen one of these, though. I'm pretty sure I've seen one of these. I can't wait. It's going to be so awful. All right,
there you go.
It's going to be so bad. And I'm still going to probably beat you in the quiz, which is hilarious.
It's Kevin Sorbo. Hashtag Hercules.
Oh, jeez. All right, Justin, let's close this this episode down. If you would be so kind, if you like what you're hearing, if you could go up on iTunes or any of the other places where you get your podcast, whether it's Stitcher, whether it's, where else we get it? Spotify, whether it's on YouTube even, if you want to go ahead and give us a little review, a little couple stars, a little thumbs up, whatever it is that system uses, we would be most grateful. If you got any feedback for us, you can catch us each at our email addresses, jeff@lollygaggerco.com or justin@lollygaggerco.com. And you can catch us on Twitter. I am @lollygaggerco and Justin's @jdbuys. I always forget your damn Twitter handle. Justin's also up on Twitch, but he's not twitching right now because he's busy, because he's doing some important adult stuff. So I'm not sure when he's going to get back. He'll probably say never. Too much. Okay, Justin, so what I would like you to do, I would like you to tell me, what is your worst hotel/motel experience?
Oh, that's actually a good one. So
quickly, because there is music playing.
So we went to a tournament for wrestling, and it was this weird on iDrive one in the back of like a weird area. And I couldn't fall asleep because the smell of weed had soaked through the walls and the curtains so hard that it gave me a headache. So that was the worst one I've ever had. So that was amazing.